Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Don't sweat. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Pat's great in for Joel and Jeremy, alongside Joe George. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Now, Joe, real quick here before we get into the Rockets, because I don't think we've talked about this yet today, but important for the people to know. Bryce Young, here in Houston, on an official top 30 visit today. If he's there at 2, because the Panthers take C.J. Stroud, he's the pick. If the Panthers take Bryce Young at 1, C.J. Stroud will be the pick. If the Panthers don't take Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud, the Texans will laugh and laugh and laugh.
I still think that's on the board, too.
That the Panthers might not take either one of those guys?
And just do something crazy and take Richardson.
I can't imagine they'd be that dumb.
Look, I don't know. These NFL teams do crazy things. Because I get the idea behind if you can work on his feet and his accuracy, that with his athleticism and his power arm, that he would be the best quarterback. Like, in the perfect world where all these quarterbacks, all four of them, develop in the way they should, Anthony Richardson would be the best in the draft. But the road to get him to that is so much longer and so much harder. Like, it seems unrealistic. So, I get the idea, why the Colts would take him at 4, why the Titans would trade up and take him at 3, or the Raiders would take him at 3. I get it. I think it's a terrible decision. But,
accuracy is more than just your footwork. You have to be able to process the information in front of you. That's not his strong point. You've got to be able to process the info in front of you, have a feel for the rush, and have your footwork down and your mechanics down. There's 2.5 of 3 things he struggles with. The idea, and look, I know, he's probably going to go at the top 6. To me, drafting Anthony Richardson is like drafting Trey Lance or Zach Wilson. You're taking a flyer, you're buying a lottery ticket, and your odds are not good. Everybody thinks, if we can fix Zix that or the other thing, he could be our Josh Allen. For every one Josh Allen, there's 40 Zach Wilsons. The first round of the NFL draft over the last 20 years is littered with athletic quarterbacks. If we could just get him to be a little bit more accurate, if we could just coach him up a little bit, if we could just work on his reading of the defenses just a little bit, this guy could be a star, and they're never stars. For every Josh Allen, there's a Trey Lance, and there's a Zach Wilson, and there's a Christian Ponder, and there's a Blaine Gabbert. There's a ton of guys who, first round, he could be something, and he's not anything. If you think about it, Ryan Tannehill was a first round pick. He had what? 2 good seasons his entire career?
He's been okay.
He had 2 good seasons in Tennessee. That's it. It's taken Geno Smith 10 years to have 1 good season.
He got paid, though.
Yeah, he did. God bless him. I am all for players getting paid. You know, Jared Goff has had, what, two good seasons? There's an awful lot more failures when you're trying to go the, hey, well, you know what, this guy, you know, if we could just fix this, that, and the other thing, you know, he'll be great. An awful lot more failures there than successes. And let's also keep something else in mind. What helped Josh Allen take that giant next step? Because it's really, really obvious. It wasn't coaching. It wasn't, oh, we changed this mechanic. It was Stephon Diggs. He got a receiver that could go catch anything.
Well, I think coaching's a big part of it. You have probably arguably one of the best offensive minds in football. I mean, look what Brian Daboll did with Daniel Jones in year one.
That's a big difference. Because for the previous couple of years, the Giants couldn't block Katy High School.
That's very true, for sure. I think that's where, like, a Will Levis or Anthony Richardson is. Like, everyone wants them to be Josh Allen, but it's way more likely that they're Zach Wilson.
And I agree with that. I also think that Will Levis has a better opportunity for consistent success than Anthony Richardson.
I don't totally agree with Jeremy's love for Will Levis, but I do think when you look back at his junior year stuff, like, it was pretty good. And they lost their OC. Their new OC was clearly incompetent. He was hurt. Their wide receivers, their best wide receivers were gone. Their offensive line was very different and bad. Like, I think there's something there. Like, I get why he's going to go top five.
I don't think Levis is going to go top five.
Really? I think he's going to. And it might be a desperation thing. But I think, like, when you look at, I think Mel Kiper's mock draft that he put out yesterday is very realistic. That quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think it's strange that Levis is falling as much as he's falling, because a year ago he was looked at as a stud quarterback, and this year he's falling down the line because, like you said, offensive line wasn't very good, didn't have any weapons, you know, played hurt. There were a lot of things working against him this year. But that being said, he's your prototype, big, tall, cannon-armed quarterback that in the pocket can make reads. Anthony Richardson hasn't shown that in the pocket he can make reads. Now, I don't know that Levis is ever going to be a star, but we know he can make reads from the pocket. That's 85% of the job in the NFL, make reads from the pocket. He might not have the highlight type qualities that Anthony Richardson has, because Richardson can tuck the ball down and then go make something crazy happen with his feet. But overall consistency, I would expect Will Levis would be a more consistent player than Anthony Richardson will ever be, because he can throw from the pocket. You know, what is Hendon Hooker going to be? I don't know. I'm kind of with you on the, I don't know that he has shown me that he could be a top-tier NFL starter. I think Hendon Hooker's career probably leads more towards, at best, middle-of-the-league starter. Like, if he's somewhere between 12 and 18, I think that's his ceiling. He really projects to me more as a guy who'll be a good backup. But I think Levis has more potential for long-term consistent success than Richardson does, because Richardson hasn't shown he can throw from the pocket with accuracy, and that's job one. You know, I don't think you can get away with being a super mobile quarterback who's generally inaccurate in the current league. I don't think you can have a Michael Vick-type quarterback who, you know, throws for, what, 2,500 yards-ish and completes like 54% of his passes in the current league, no matter how many rushing yards he racks up. You know, and Michael Vick had a year he ran for over 1,000 yards.
He probably had a couple.
They actually only had one, believe it
really?
Or not.
Really? Was like that? Was that like 04?
06.
06?
But 04, he had 900, so it's not like you're way off.
The thing with Anthony Richardson, too, though, is that he is just getting – it's not just Josh Allen. It's definitely Jalen Hurts. Even though – but their issues are so different. Like, people try to act like Jalen Hurts was not an accurate quarterback in college.
He was extremely accurate.
He was 70% his last year in Oklahoma. He just didn't have the power arm.
Jalen Hurts basically put up the same numbers Kyler Murray put up at Oklahoma, and Murray, you know, was the number one overall pick. The only reason Hurts wasn't looked at was because there was still bias from that previous title game where Tua comes in, and Joe Burrow had the most unbelievable season and broke damn near every college football passing record. Joe Burrow was playing college football on rookie. He just had ridiculous numbers. But the disrespect, and I've always been on the Jalen Hurts bandwagon, so I can say this, the disrespect that has been shown to Jalen Hurts going all the way back to that title game for Alabama where he got benched has been absolutely ludicrous. People act like this kid didn't win everywhere he went. Like, this kid wasn't a natural leader and a leader on every team he's ever been on. He actually took a year and accepted being the backup because he's a coach's kid. He accepted the humility, right? He gave it to you, showed it to you before he transferred. And then when he transferred, put up amazing numbers that because of Joe Burrow, somehow people looked at like it wasn't that big a deal. Oh, well, Baker Mayfield put up those numbers too. And Kyler Murray put up those numbers too. So what you're saying is this guy just put up the same numbers as like the last two guys who went number one in the draft, but this guy stinks and those guys are good. All right, I got that. That makes sense. Logic train absolutely hit a freaking wall there. I never understood the disrespect of Jalen Hurts. Even in Philadelphia, the disrespect of Jalen Hurts. Who, by the way, was at the Super Bowl this year.
Pretty good, too.
I mean, I never understood that. But you can't, like, I don't think you can play with a Michael Vick-type quarterback who's just not accurate. I don't think you can win like that. Spoiler alert. Falcons never won anything with Michael Vick. I know it's shocking, hard to believe. Spoiler alert. They didn't win bleep. All right. We got on another one of those tangents, Joe. This happens sometimes.
It does.
But how convinced are you that the Rockets and James Harden are headed for marriage again? We'll get into that on the Bees next.
Turn down.
Razor Shark commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, PC in for Joel and Jeremy. Joe George, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5. Joe, how convinced are you James Harden and the Rockets are inevitably going to get rehitched in the off season?
Sadly, I'm pretty convinced.
I'm with you. I
think it's going
to
happen.
The more this goes on, the more I feel like this is going to be a done deal. At which point the question becomes, how big a contract are they going to give James Harden? Because it's one thing to bring him back. It's another to give him a max deal. And there's got to be some common sense that they're not going to just give him a full, absolute max deal. I don't know that that's going to happen, though. I could definitely see the Rockets greatly overpaying James Harden and just, well, whatever, we got James Harden back.
I mean they have the one thing with the contract side of it is they have such little money on the books that if the contract's only like 3 years, it doesn't have to derail the franchise from adding someone else, like in the past. Like when, like, all they could do is trade bad contract for bad contract for bad contract. Yep. Thankfully, like, they're not at that position yet where, like, they could sign Harden if that's the path they choose to go. And then the following offseason, they could sign another max contract player. And by the time Jalen and Jabari and these guys need to get paid, Harden would be gone. Well, so, like, it can work financially in a somewhat positive way. I just think it's a bad decision.
Harden's making $33 million this year. The Rockets have about $60 million in cap space. He's got a player option for next year for $35.5 million that he's expected to opt out of. Now, there's been rumors. When James Harden was here, he bought a house for his mother, so his mother lives here. There's been rumors that his mom is not in the best health. I don't know if that's true or not, but I certainly absolutely wish the best for her. And if she is struggling with health, I hope that she recovers. But there's been some rumors flying around that she might not be in the best health. There is a significant train of thought from the Pacific Northwest, where Scotty Brooks is the lead assistant on Chauncey Billups' staff, that his bags are already packed for Houston. That there is zero chance he is returning, that he is all but basically gone to Houston. Whether that means as a head coach or as a lead assistant, that is not determined. But that Scotty Brooks' bags are packed for Houston because he's going with James Harden.
This all sounds bad.
Brooks and Harden, of course, have an excellent relationship and have basically since James came into the league. Now, Houston got permission to talk with Kenny Atkinson, former head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, currently the lead assistant in Golden State. They also got permission to talk to Adrian Griffin, who's an assistant in Toronto. I would love Kenny Atkinson to be the head coach for the Rockets. You want to talk about a guy who got a raw deal. Kenny Atkinson developed Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie and Jared Allen and made the Brooklyn Nets a really good up-and-coming young team, so much so that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving identified them as, that's the team we want to go to. They've got the young talent that can help us. And then, of course, as soon as they get there, Kyrie undermines the head coach, and KD, who's not even playing, is getting the young talent traded away so that they could, you know, play his buddy, DeAndre Jordan, who couldn't hit a foul shot of his life, depended on it, and ultimately pushed to get James Harden. And, of course, Kyrie ran James Harden out the door as soon as KD got hurt. I would love Kenny Atkinson to be the guy. That guy we know knows how to develop young talent, knows how to coach, doesn't get pushed around. Look, that's a big deal to me. Steven Silas got pushed around. I don't think it's a matter of Steven Silas can't coach. I don't think you've been in the league for 20-plus years because you can't coach. I think he allowed himself to be pushed around by Rafael Stone, and I think he allowed himself to be pushed around by the younger players who did not have a whole lot of discipline, and that this team needs somebody like a Kenny Atkinson who's going to have a little bit of a firmer hand and isn't going to tolerate the BS. Not from the players and not from Stone. Now, that being said, there's a couple of things here that this goes into. Number one, among the potential head coaches, who are your favorites? I'll give you, you know what? Let's do this circle of trust style. I'll give you the coach and you tell me, in the circle of trust, meaning that you would like them to be the head coach. On the bubble, meaning, okay, but not my first choice. Out of the circle, hell no. Where is Kenny Atkinson in your circle of trust?
He's inside.
Okay, he's inside for me as well.
He's closer to the bubble than most, but he's inside still.
Okay, so I have him dead in the center. But we're, no, not that far apart. James Borrego, former head man in Charlotte. He actually had the Hornets up to 43 wins before he was somehow ejected.
He is inside.
He's a pop guy.
I think that I don't know how the general public would feel about that hire, but I think when you look at his run in Charlotte, you know, it starts off okay. Year two is kind of a disaster. Year three, they improve by 10 wins. Year four, they improve by 10 wins, and they end up with over 40 wins and above 500. And then Michael Jordan thinks that it's a good idea to meddle in the franchise more and get rid of a coach, and they've been a nightmare since. Like, there's pieces there that, like, I kind of see that could be a good fit. So he's inside.
I think Borrego's also inside. I don't have him dead center the way I have Atkinson, but I have him kind of in between the center and the edge. Like, I don't look at him as a bad – I think he'd be a good option. I said Scotty Brooks is the feeling up in Portland is he's already packed his bags for Houston. He's been the top assistant with the Blazers. He was the head coach with the Thunder, where he won 62% of his games. He also coached, you know, Harden, Westbrook, Durant, Ibaka, Steven Adams. I mean, they had a lot of talent on those teams. But he did cultivate that talent, and then they won a lot of games, even though they did absolutely choke against the Warriors.
He's a bubble guy for me.
Yes. I like him much better as the lead assistant than I do as the head coach. So I will say bubble on him.
Yeah, he's definitely bubble. I mean, it's hard to, because, man, those guys were so young, but it's such a long time ago. You could probably draw some very fair comparisons of Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Kevin Durant, and coaching that young core of talent to Jalen Green, Jabari Smith Jr., and Wembanyama, and Shengun Ibaka. Obviously, there's another connection to playing style, but just in terms of having four very young kids and putting them in the right direction for the franchise, and really they all played their best basketball besides KD, and or not, they played great together. And, like, could he do that here? Possibly, but, like, he's a bubble guy for me.
All right, this is also a pop guy, except dude looks like a lady. Becky Hammon. Where would you be on Becky Hammon being the head coach of the Houston Rockets? Under Popovich for a long time. First year in the WNBA with the Vegas Aces, she wins championship. She was very highly respected by Spurs players. She's going into the Hall of Fame this summer. How do you feel about Becky Hammon as the head coach?
Nah.
Why nah?
I just... People want to talk about the issues with the Rockets' young players is that they didn't respect Stephen Silas. And I think you have to have a female head coach in the NBA. You're going to have a veteran group of players that respects the person, not just because they're a female, but respects the title of head coach. And if they didn't respect Stephen Silas, I don't expect these guys to respect a female head coach. Maybe that's a really negative view of these players, but it's just the reality that I don't think that they would buy in.
I don't think that's totally unfair. And while you could say it's, you know, it's sexist or misogynistic, it's also kind of real. And I think if Becky Hammon was going to be the head coach, you would have to have at least one assistant coach who basically acted like sergeant at arms and was the ass kicker in the group and was going to make sure no shenanigans took place. And you already have at least one guy on the team in Kevin Porter Jr. who you know has attitude problems.
Yeah, it's not that I don't think she could be a successful coach in the NBA, but I don't know if I would think that this team would succeed that way.
Ime Udoka.
All in.
All in.
I guess I want to hear a little more details.
Well, look, he's another pop guy. He went to the NBA Finals. He had an inappropriate relationship with a female staffer and got fired.
Yeah, it's weird to me how there hasn't been more detail shared with what really transpired. And I would have a lot of questions about that if he was made the head coach here of the Rockets. And I think the fan base would deserve that because the actions and of what we think happened indicate something terrible, but that story hasn't come out yet. So I want to know what happened before I could say, I guess, all in. But if it's really just he was with the wrong person, then I'm fine with it. But there's still more information to be shared.
How about Frank Vogel? Frank Vogel had some very deep playoff runs with a flawed Indiana Pacers team, won a fake title with the Lakers in the bubble, and then got scapegoated because management put together a bad team. What about Frank Vogel as the head coach?
Bubble guy. I wouldn't hate it. I don't love it. There's better names, but if that's where you want to go, I'm fine with it.
I feel like I'd be okay with him being in the bubble, but he's being in the circle, but he's much closer to the bubble edge than anybody else.
Yeah, he's definitely bubble. Him and Scott Brooks for me are for sure the bubble people.
All right, so we got an idea of, you know, kind of where.
There's one more.
There is. You're interested in Dave Yeager.
Mm-mm. Not that one. The guy who's dead center in the middle of the bubble. Nick Nurse.
100%. Well, he has to lose his job.
Yeah, the Miami Heat's not helping that.
He's got to actually be available. But he might be. All right, coming up next, it's a final in Pittsburgh. We'll let you know what happened when we come back. Killer Bees.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
PC for Joel and Jeremy, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Joe George on the other side of the glass. The Houston Astros, who once upon a time were 3-6, and everybody who was covering the team was panicking, and the fans were panicking, and hosts were panicking. Well, they've won 3 of 4. They are now 6-7 after a 7-0 whitewashing of the Pittsburgh Pirates. They take the series in a game that this is probably the most 2022 Astros game that they've played this year. They hit power. They hit some homers. They play defense. The pitching was overall solid. Very, very solid. And they didn't strike out. They drew walks. Jose Urquidy got his first win of the year. 6 shutout innings. 2 hits, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. Now, 3 walks is probably more than Urquidy wants to do. He's generally a strike-throwing machine. Urquidy doesn't walk that many guys. So 3 walks actually kind of unusual for Jose Urquidy. 2 strikeouts is a low number. Now, Urquidy's not a big strikeout guy, but 2 is a little bit low. But this is the important thing. Number one, he threw first pitch strikes to 14 of the 21 batters he faced. He threw first pitch strikes. He had 12 called strikes. He had 15 swings and misses. That's 27 strikes with no contact out of the 93 pitches he threw today. That's a really good number. Compare that to Rich Hill, who got 4 swinging strikes today in 95 pitches. Urquidy got swings and misses early in the count. And for a guy who generally is a fly ball pitcher, he got 6 ground balls today, including an around the horn double play. Jose Urquidy pitched really well today. He wasn't overpowering, but he was smart. And his command was there. The ball went where he wanted it to go. Hector Neris, 2 punch outs in the 7th. Brian Abreu, 2 punch outs in the 8th. Ronel Blanco, 2 punch outs in the 9th. 7-0. And you know what? Let's, number one, for all the Jose Abreu hate, he was 2 for 5 with a double and a rib. Mauricio Dubon Is this an 8-game hitting streak now? 2-for-5 with a run scored. Mauricio Dubon. All right, sit down for a second before you know I say numbers and you kind of pass out. Hitting .361. Mauricio Dubon's OPS is over 900. As Dubon with another double, his third double of the year today.
Yeah, fourth multi-hit game too.
I mean, I don't know, like, did somebody find the Monstars steal talent from someone else and give it to Dubon? If that's so, can this please last at least until Altuve comes back? Because nobody in their right mind ever thought Mauricio Dubon would hit enough to play every day while Jose Altuve was out. Mauricio Dubon's hitting .361. He is the highest average on the team. Corey Judge 2-for-5 today with a double and a homer. He's up to .294. I mean, Corey Judge, who early was pretty much just hitting singles, has started to find the power stroke. He also made a terrific sliding catch in left field as Yordan got the day off today. He made a terrific sliding catch, one that, look, Yordan was never going to make that catch. So, I mean, to me, Corey Jokes playing left field should have, as long as he keeps hitting, should happen more often than not. They cannot afford Yordan to get hurt. I'm sorry, Yordan should DH like 5 times a week, at least until Michael Brantley's ready to come back. And the more we see less and less updates on Michael Brantley, the more I feel like Michael Brantley's not going to be back until maybe the middle of May. I'm not buying this, oh, he'll be back, you know, before the end of April. I'm really just not buying it. And if he does come back that early, I don't think there's any way in hell he's ready to play the field. He didn't even throw of spring training.
That's what's, I think, tricky about Brantley is he ready to come back as a hitter, or are you waiting for him to be ready to come back as a hitter and a fielder? Because those are two very different conversations. Because Michael Brantley, like we've seen it in his past, he can be injured, come back, and as soon as his bat, like his bat will get going right away. But like, are you willing to bring him back if that means Alvarez is going to have to play in left field every day until Brantley's ready, or one of them's going to have to be out of the lineup? That, I think, is like the tricky part with Brantley's timetable.
I feel like if Jokes continues to hit, they can afford to be more patient with Brantley. As long as Corey hits, I think he'll keep playing, and that will give them the time to build up Brantley's arms so that he can play the field.
Yeah, and Dana Brown said he's going to get he'll have a stint in Sugar Land with the Space Cowboys. And I think the question just becomes, how long is that? And if he's going to go to the Space Cowboys first, then I would assume that means he's going there for field work.
I would hope so, because, I mean, you know, you could just say, all right, well, Mike's going to go down to Sugar Land. He's going to get 3 or 4 games in where he'll get 4 at-bats and get pulled. And he could just DH those whole time and just get his bat in the lineup. Can you go with Yordan in left field every day? I think you're getting very risky if you're playing Yordan in the field every day.
Yeah, and so I think the long-term thing question is when Brantley comes back is who's going down.
And I also think that if you bring up Brantley and he's not ready to play the field, you're only going to be able to bat him 4 out of 7 games because, you know, if Yordan plays the outfield 4 out of 7, Brantley can DH those days. But when Yordan DHs, Uncle Mike's not ready to play, he's just a pinch hitter. And to me, if that's the case, you're not really changing the need in the outfield. And when Uncle Mike comes back, you're probably sending down one of the catchers, which, you know, Yiner was 1-for-3 today. Had a sack fly, had a run, a rib. But look, Yiner needs to get at bats. He's the number 2 prospect in your system. He's the number 1 bat in your system. He can't get 7 at bats every 7 days. He needs to get playing time. And if they're not going to play him, and look, once Brantley comes back, the DH spot is going to be fully occupied between him and Yordan. Well, they might as well send Yan Diaz down to Sugarland and get at bats every day and then have him ready to be called up later on. I don't know that Salazar can hit worth a lick, but you know, you heard Dana Brown say, look, he projects more as the backup catcher. I don't think it matters to the Astros or to Salazar if he plays once a week. I don't think they care about that. Yiner can't play once a week. He's got to play every day.
Yeah, I think he goes down when Brantley gets back, and then when Altuve comes back, Jake Myers.
Right now, it's got to be Jake Myers. Right, Korchok's hitting.
To me, you've got a bunch of fourth outfielders.
And I know, look, I know Myers is more of a true center fielder, and Corey can play center field, but it's not his best position. But you know what? I think Dusty will look at Dubon as the backup center fielder.
Exactly.
And when Chaz needs a day off, Dubon will play center field, especially if Doobie's going to hit, he could play. I will have no problem with Dubon playing if he keeps hitting. I don't know how long it lasts.
I have a question. I have a question for you, Pat.
Go ahead.
If Mauricio Dubon keeps hitting the way he does, when Jose Altuve returns, should there be a conversation about Mauricio Dubon being the everyday center fielder over Chaz McCormick?
Only if Chaz is absolutely mired in misery.
And he probably won't be, because he's played great since he became the starting center fielder. He's been great in leadoff for this team. Like, frankly, if he's playing like this, I'm cool if they kept him there and had Altuve bat second. I don't think they will. But
no, I don't think so either, because I don't think Chaz's on base will stay high enough.
Yeah, they'll put Chaz down at the bottom of the order. But if Dubon's hitting like this, and you believed in Mauricio Dubon so much last year.
Oh, yeah.
That he was Justin Verlander's personal center fielder.
Good thing, because he couldn't hit a beach ball last year.
But now he can. So, like, is Mauricio Dubon going to force the conversation? Because the one thing is, as we all know, Dusty don't like Chaz. I think he's pulling.
We never understand that either.
He wanted Jake. It's why Jake started the first two games of the season. And then Chaz basically has been playing great baseball since.
And look, I said before, it's going to spring training. If Jake Myers is going to get a timeshare, he needed to outplay Chaz McCormick significantly. Chaz has outplayed Jake significantly. And for whatever it is, I don't know if it's in his head or what, but Jake has not been the same player at the major league level since he suffered the torn labrum. I don't know if he's more than a 4A player, but he's not going to find his confidence playing once a week either.
I think he's just a 4A guy.
They got to send him down and get him regular at bats and have him find a stroke. And maybe he winds up, hey, you know what, he's down AAA and he's hitting and he winds up being a tradable asset. To me, Chaz McCormick should be the center fielder. He actually wound up, as an offensive player, being a top 10 center fielder last year, and he didn't play every day, and the average wasn't great, but you know, he had some home runs, he had some doubles, he hit enough to actually have a top 10 OPS.
I believe peak Jake Myers is trading him for a player the quality of Phil Maton. He's Miles Straw to me.
If he's able to reach the potential that we've seen him have, he's obviously a lot better than Miles Straw, but that doesn't mean he can find that at the major league level. So, again, until he finds it, he should be down in AAA, and I think he will be once Altuve comes back, especially since, look, Corey can play center. It's just not his best position, and you wouldn't play him there often. Dubon would be the backup center fielder, and Corey would be the backup corner outfielder. So I do think Jake Myers is very much looking at being on the Sugar Land Express right back down to AAA. It could be about 2 months, but I think he's going to find himself there. All right, one more segment to go before the wheelhouse. Who is the coward? Is it Cody Stutz? Is it Jeremy Branham? We will determine this next.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's get ready to rumble!
It's the battle for the coward of the county. Cody Stutes. Jeremy Branham. I guess Stutesy's in the blue corner and Branham's in the red corner. So, there was an official challenge made on air yesterday. It was made official on the Wheelhouse by one Cody Stutes. He was throwing out a formal challenge to Jeremy Branham. He wanted to make a bet, and he called out a member of the Killer Bees.
Here's my challenge to you, Jeremy Branham. Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, CJ Stroud, and Bryce Young will all be selected before the 12th overall pick in this year's draft is on the clock. And if they are all selected, you owe me 3 hours of sign spinning during the Wheelhouse. And if one of them's on the board when 12 overall is on the clock, I owe you 3 hours of sign spinning during the Killer Bees. Take that, if you want, coward.
The disrespect, Joe George. The disrespect is not just real. It is dripping. It is permeating through the airwaves. Cody Stutes just flat out double rods to Jeremy Branham. Your thoughts on Cody's challenge?
Well, I think a couple points here. First of all, Coward is pretty aggressive.
Very aggressive.
Considering, as we found out today at our Twitter mentions, that Jeremy initiated this challenge, a bet for $100.
That's a big bet for Jeremy, by the way.
I think the sign spinning, the sign that's behind the B right now, if you're watching on twitch.tv/ESPN975, watching one of these guys spin that for 3 hours would be hilarious. So I think I like the wager itself better. I'm fascinated to see if... I'm assuming Jeremy will officially accept tomorrow on the show.
So Jeremy and Cody have been going at it on Twitter right underneath my show tweet that mentioned this.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy had... so he's like, I'd like to put some... I'd like to put some evidence in for the discussion, where Jeremy said he was having a conversation with somebody else who covers the Texans and said that, Jeremy feels like there's a bigger chance growing that the Texans will go defense with the second pick in the draft. And, you know, his franchise quarterbacks can be acquired outside of the second pick in the draft. And then Cody jumped in and said, how can you guarantee getting a quarterback if the Texans take a defensive player at 2? And he said, take one at 12. And at that point, you know, it was said, well, that's not a plan. That's hoping that there's a quarterback. Jeremy said, I'll bet you $100 there's a quarterback available at 12. Cody said, real hard to lose that one. Is this a joke? Because obviously, well, Hendon Hooker could be available at 12. That would count as a quarterback, right? But then there was also another tweet Jeremy was having with somebody else where I think he said something like it was possible that all the quarterbacks could go before 12, but you know, it hadn't happened in, you know, like decades.
Yeah, we actually debunked that yesterday.
Oh, so it's false.
He did a Google search. He showed me the search. He showed me the research. Google did him wrong because it happened in 2018. There was 4 quarterbacks taken in the first round.
1, 2, 3, 4?
No.
I was going to say, I don't recall it being 1, 2, 3, 4.
No.
That's,
I believe, for sure has never happened. I dug into that. I did not see that ever.
So Jeremy said he believed he answered Cody's question. Then they got into a little bit of smack talk, and that continued. So right now, who are you putting the coward label on? Is it Cody
that's not fair,
for the joke? Or is it Cody for the bet? Or is it Jeremy for refusing to answer?
Well, I think, you know, Jeremy's going to answer tomorrow. I'm going to make him. I promise. I'll make him answer the bet in the first segment of the show tomorrow.
So we're going to table this discussion to 12:05 tomorrow afternoon when Jeremy is back on the Bees. And the king, Joe George, king is going to make him answer.
He has to accept. We got reports from Not Santa on Twitter that apparently Cody said it could be broken up into 3 1-hour spinning sessions, which I think makes more sense.
Do you think it's a bigger punishment to lay out the $100 or to have to stand there while the other guys are on air spinning the sign?
Oh, I'd rather pay the money.
I'd rather pay the money, too.
Even if you could break it up into 3 1-hour sessions,
that's
worse. Yeah.
I'd rather just get all my humiliation out in one spot.
Pat, there's no way. There's no way you're spinning that sign for 3 straight hours. There's no chance. Like, you feel like your arms are going to fall off.
Well, can you put one of those spinny things on it so you just go like this?
I mean, maybe it's back there. I don't know. No, that's cheating. No, you got to spin it by hand. We got to be doing some flips and tricks.
Dude, if I had to spin it by hand, I would hit somebody in the head with it at least every 5 minutes by accident because I'd be dropping it and throwing it and all kinds. It'd be a mess.
Yeah, I think that Jeremy will accept.
You think Jeremy is going to accept Cody's challenge? Quarterback, and I'm assuming when we say quarterback, we have to be talking about the top four quarterbacks.
Yeah, we need to
be specific about that.
Yeah, because I think there's some semantics, some doors being opened to semantics there that could really upset both sides if we're including Hendon Hooker in this conversation.
Where is Chief Wahoo McStutzi anyway? Why is he not in here yet?
He'll be here.
We could have been having this conversation with him.
Jeremy, I'll make sure Jeremy and I make a decision, and we'll bring Cody in for the last segment tomorrow.
I feel like Cody doing a little cowardly thing here, not coming in to have this discussion with me. Very, very disappointed at that. It's going to do it for us today. Appreciate our callers, texters, tweeters, twitchers. My man Joe George on the other side of the glass. You know what? Jake Asman, Brad Kellner, Cody Stutz, The Wheelhouse. They're next. See you at 7.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.